raw materials such as silk and wool in rural areas.
Such collectives safeguard the rights and income of weavers who frequently receive the least profit from their products. This is mainly due to numerous middlemen businesses that make money from carpets. Cooperatives also serve another purpose. They organize the production chain by linking material producers with weavers and buyers to complete a production cycle. The massive exhibition is one of the best places to get a bird's eye view of this thriving market. Yes, ironically, one of the biggest importers of Iranian handmade carpets used to be the United States. This is followed by European countries. However, owing to the US-imposed sanctions, Americans were forced to find alternate avenues to satisfy their cravings for these highly coveted carpets.
For centuries, the Iranian carpet has represented the country's rich culture and art. Its stunning design and exquisite quality have turned the ancient craft into a lucrative commodity sought after by many across the world. But Iran's handwoven carpet exports have also seen numerous ups and downs over the decades.
Industry participants say the US sanctions tried to pull the rug out from under the Persian carpet legacy. But the move didn't work and only seems to have increased the world's demand for these items. 1994 was the golden period for Iranian handwoven carpet exports. Back then, exports peaked at over $2 billion. Later down the road, the US imposed a ban on Persian rugs in 2010. After signing a 2015 nuclear deal, the ban was lifted only to be reimposed after Washington unilaterally pulled out of the accord in 2018. That's also around the time when cheap knockoffs of Persian rugs made by Asian countries began flooding the market. Either way, authentic handwoven rugs from Iran still hold their place in the market despite roller coaster exports. The industry is gradually bouncing back. According to Iran's Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture, the country still maintains first place in exports of handwoven carpets worldwide. Based on figures from the National Customs Administration, exports of handwoven carpets increased to nearly 85% in terms of value in the first 2 months of 2021 alone. According to the National Carpet Center of Iran, last year the country exported some $64 million worth of these items. Also, production went up after the coronavirus pandemic as many craftspeople who had left the sector returned, causing a production jump of around 400%.
All right, while I take a quick little break here, I'll be back shortly. Hey everyone, welcome to another special feature of Bazaar. I'm your host Ali Reza, and today we're checking out a knowledge-based company that is saving the country around $20 million worth of imports annually by managing to produce inhaler capsules that we use to import from foreign countries through in-house knowledge, research, and technology. Stay tuned to find out how they did it.
Patients with asthma or dyspnea need to use inhalers to get the prescribed drug into their lungs. That requires not just the active substance of the drug, but also a sort of carrier to take the drug into your lungs before it is fully absorbed in your mouth, before it even gets down your trachea. You will find them mixed with the active substance in inhaler capsules that the inhaler punctures once you put the capsule in, which then you inhale.
Our journey begins in the storage room where they bring in the raw material, the active substance for these inhaler capsules in the form of tiotropium bromide. Now, this company produces 45 million of these inhaler capsules annually for the 150 to 200,000 patients in the country that are prescribed to use them. And they use not more than 1 kilogram of this active substance, this tiotropium bromide, to make all of these. Now let's check out the production line to see how it's actually made.
The raw material in the form of a small amount of tiotropium bromide, as well as the excipients, which would be the aforementioned carriers that mix with the active substance, are then sent to the production line along with the gelatin capsules themselves, which would later be filled with our formulation substance, the mixture of our active substance and the excipients.
So before we get into the actual production line, first they bring the raw material from the storage room to allocate, to determine what amount of each formulation material they need to bring into the production line. So that includes the active substance, the aforementioned tiotropium bromide, and the excipients, which is the additive substances. So once they've allocated the necessary amounts of those, they bring it to the production line, which we will check out now.
Perhaps the biggest challenge in this production line is the mixing of an infinitely small amount of active substance with the excipients to get a completely uniform mixture of our formulation substance that you would find inside the capsules. The production line would have to be sensitive enough to mix 18 micrograms of tiotropium bromide with 10 milligrams of excipients in a completely uniform way. 1 microgram, by the way, is 1/1,000,000th of a gram.
There's actually very little substance in it. And that is because the capsule filling machine is capable of microdosing, which after we bring the formulated powder from the previous process, this machine can fill this container, this little capsule, with just 10 milligrams worth of powder, formulated powder, which is not a capability that a lot of capsule filling machines are capable of. So once this capsule is filled with our 10 milligrams worth of formulated substance, we then go to the container filling room.
The containers that have been filled with exactly 30 capsules are brought to be labeled, then packaged, to be sent back into the warehouse, to be sent to pharmacies, and get in the hands of patients. But before that happens, they need to go through one final stage of quality assurance. Because this company has managed to fully domesticize the production technology of this particular product, they're able to save 90% of the currency that would otherwise be spent on procuring this very product for the patients in the country through imports. That is $9 million worth of savings, and they're fully capable of doing that because their production line allows for even leftover for exports. Because of the competitive pricing of the aforementioned tiotropium bromide capsules, the value of the potential exports of this product is estimated to be around $30 million.
And now we are at the quality control lab, and one of the most important quality control procedures that they do is to test the actual performance of the formula and the capsule. So what they do is they use a regular inhaler as a normal patient would. They would insert the capsule in it and use the lung simulator. So they would insert the inhaler, and with the help of a vacuum pump attached to this flow regulator attached to the simulator itself, they simulate the flow of a normal human inhale and see how much of the formula is administered to different stages of the lung. Each of these circles has these holes on them, which gets exponentially smaller the lower you go, to the point that at the bottom you don't really even see any of these holes. And the residue left by the formula through this inhale, we test out to see how much of the formula is left on each stage, and then we would see whether the residue left measures up to the amount that we wanted it to, and that pretty much concludes the test, the performance test for our formula. And that also pretty much concludes this episode of Boaz Earth. Take care and bye-bye. For our final portion of the program, let's check out some news and trends in the knowledge-based industries. The activities of knowledge-based companies are not just limited to Iran's borders. They have also headed to Venezuela to kick off a tech and science fair showcasing Iran's latest technological achievements.
Nearly 80 Iranian firms participated alongside hundreds of Venezuelan companies in the fair. They offered products and services in numerous fields such as oil, gas, health, pharmaceuticals, agriculture, and machinery. The goal is to exchange experiences, knowledge, and services and deepen Iran's trade ties with the Latin American country. The expo was launched by Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. During the ceremony, Maduro announced that 4 fuel-efficient Iranian car models would be assembled in his country and released into the Venezuelan market.
One trend we are seeing these days is the increased activity of biotech companies. In fact, right now, knowledge-based products from this sector hold 40% of the country's total pharmaceutical exports to show for it.
That's based on the Association of Manufacturers and Exporters of Medical Biotechnology Products. Biotech refers to the use of living systems and organisms to develop products. According to the association, these products have saved the country millions in foreign exchange. Additionally, these knowledge-based companies have made Iran self-sufficient in biotech production. This sector exports its products to European, Asian, and Latin American countries while competing with other items in the international arena.
That covers our program for today. On behalf of the entire Bazaar team, thank you for tuning in and bye for now. Until then.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear ladies. Welcome to a new episode of your favorite program, in which we're talking about ladies, and the greatest of all these ladies is Fatima al-Zahra, salamullah alayha, whom we have been talking about for quite some sessions. It has been, sister. And here with me, I have Sister Zainab, of course. Welcome, sister, and salamu alaikum.
Walaikum assalam. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be with you, Sister.
Of course, the pleasure is all mine. So we actually have been talking about Fatima al-Zahra, salamullah alayha's lifestyle, and then we reached to the point where she was put in a situation to pick the right husband, and then she picked Imam Ali alayhi salam, and we already talked about her criteria. The thing that is important is that marriage starts with a decision. And then it has to continue with so much of sacrifice and then understanding and then so much of maturity. How was her relationship with her husband, how she treated him, and the things that happened in between them?
When she chooses him, she gets engaged to him for 9 months. And in these 9 months, Prophet, peace be upon him, tries to make her healthy. That's very important. That's a message for all of us. Like, he tells her that since you're going to enter a married life, you got to be healthy, because a healthy mother can get healthy children. This engagement time is something that you get to know each other, but
and the most important time, because it's just like a research you're
because
doing.
Now you're going to select someone with whom you're going to spend entire life, and you don't have chances to come back from there.
Yeah, there's
it's
very, no
very
coming
hard.
Back
it's very very hard like though however I'm trying to say that this never means that your engagement time should be for years and years, so that like now you get bored.
Don't take it that long away. Moderation again.
The most important thing is her mehriya, which was only 480 dirham. What is mehriya? It's a security money given to a woman and in Islam, and women can go and search about that. 480 was not extremely less that time. 40 is not extreme amount of money. However, Imam Ali al-Islam goes and sells out one of his shields, and then he gets 400 dirham.
That he used for the wars.
Yeah, and he gets 400 dirham out of it, which again teaches men that you have to make sure that you pay this amount to
your wife.
Not like you come, and because I have been hearing from most of the women that my husband says, since we are not going to get separated from each other, we're not divorcing each other, there's no
matter. Divorcing.
There's no talk of mahriya. So I don't know how to pay you. No, it's a right of women. They have to pay them. And Imam Ali al-Islam goes and prepares this before his marriage. He goes and, prepares this amount, gets ready this amount, and also...
So, we're talking about her marriage. Let's put it here and go for a short break. And after that, we are going to continue the rest.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back, dear ladies. You're listening to Muslim Lady, and we're talking about marriage, the marriage of Lady Fatima Salamullah alayha with her husband Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam. We talked about the criteria of marriage. We talked about different stuff related to how to pick the right person. And then we came to this part when it is the ceremony. And in some cultures, it has got to do a lot with extravagance and spending so much of money. And then we talked about mehriyeh, which is like a burden on so many men's shoulder. And we have to take it easier.
Yes, it's not like you don't have to ask for it at all.
Yeah, just
but at the same
easy.
Time, yeah. Yeah.
Because if you have picked the right person, then this amount is not going to count as a very important thing in your life.
It's a very, very unfortunate that many of the women out there, they take full right of mehriyeh and they demand so much and they take even so much. But at the same time, they don't want to abide by other rules of Islam. Mehriyeh is in Islam, you're taking it. But at the same time, when Islam is telling you to go for hijab and other things, now you don't want to accept it. It's very, very unfortunate that who take some rules what they like and forget other rules. That
well, actually, mehriyeh is supposed to be considered as a gift to women.
Yes.
So the right of a woman in here is to take it easy upon the man. And then the right of the man is to have it in mind that he's going to pay it to her.
Yeah, and also I'm saying that if you are taking this right, you are demanding it, and you're taking this amount, also keep in mind there are other rules you have to abide the same way.
Exactly, yeah. You cannot say yes to some of the rules.
And no
and
to others that
no
you like.
No to most of the rules.
Yeah. Do not abide by some of the rules of Islam that you like, and you don't abide by those that do not get into your mind. Since they do not get into your mind, that does not mean that you don't have to follow them.
Exactly.
You can research more, you can ponder more about the rules that are not, you know, getting into your mind, but that never means that you got to pick up someone's and that are in your favor.
Yeah.
And, you know, ignore all others.
To have two baskets, on my favor and the other ones who are against me.
Exactly.
Then the ones that are against me are more technically, I would leave them aside and then I would go for the ones that are for my benefit. So now, at the very first step, we understood that she started a simple life. She didn't go for too much of mehriyeh, and she didn't have such a very
even her ceremony,
ostensible show of wedding.
No, even her wedding, it's reported that it was so simple,
so modest. Her wedding ceremony
exactly.
was so modest.
There was, and it's also reported that there was a difference between mahrams and non-mahrams. They were separated. There
yeah.
was no, because in today's cultures we book halls where both are together, men are together. Obviously you don't go into a wedding function as simple as you're at home. You just try
yeah.
put on all your stuff, whatever
exactly.
you have, try to get into your best part.
We're talking to ladies and they know how the
exactly.
wedding goes.
I should be going there and everyone should be looking at me.
I should shine like a diamond.
You can do that, or try to separate.
This is the point.
Try to separate
yeah.
the functions. Like, even if society is not doing that, do that from yourself. Like, whatever the functions you carry out, separate men and women.
Yeah.
Because at least you have the right to be your best in the functions. I'm not against, like, not to be... do not do makeup in the functions. Do not express yourself.
And
do
we
not...
shouldn't forget that this is how we have been suggested to do.
Yeah, and even if you are now in a mixed culture wherein it's not possible, then try to be as modest as possible.
Yeah,
make
so
it simple and best.
Yeah. So if there is no way for separation of men and women in the function,
do not come up, do not make yourself like a person who would be picked up from the crowd.
Yeah, who would attract the attention of all the men, because then the consequences are not going to be for the benefit of each side.
Exactly. Family strength is very important.
Yeah, that's
your hijab can weaken the family strength of some other men. It's not the right of every third person to look at you.
Yeah.
Sometimes, not sometimes, it's like the person who is married, it's his wife's right that he looks at her. In our weddings, we have women like, they say to tailors, they say to designers, they say to the...
I want to compete the bride.
No. That's obviously...
That's the main idea.
Everyone should not look at bride, they should look at me.
Yeah.
Well, this is the most...
Wow. So horrible. Vicious sort of thought. Because that is the special day for the bride. And then the others are just guests who are going to accompany her in this very beautiful day of her life. Yeah. So now we talked about the criteria of the person we're going to pick. And also we talked about the marriage function and how it should go.
How it should be going. Because now, if there was someone, because most of the people say, oh, I deserve a blasting, I deserve a bombastic function. If you deserve the most, the couple that deserved the most
glorious wedding,
exactly, was the couple of Imam Ali and Lady Zahra, salamu alayha. When they did it simple, when they put it simple, why can't you, why can't me?
Exactly. So try to make it as simple as you can. Then let's go for a short break and we'll be back to follow the rest. Dear ladies, we're talking about weddings and marriage functions, which is actually every girl's dream, but we shouldn't react to it in a very magnified manner. So we should take it as simple as it could be. Then we should take care of every single thing, specifically the fact that this is going to be only one night, a happy night, that is supposed to be a modest day, not an ostensible show of whatever you have. Then keep it simple, and then notice that after this day, it's not going to be the end of your life. You know, you're going to have so much to do in
future. Yes, I would like to extend your point that you said, because most of the people come up with the excuse that, oh, come on, it's just one day. Oh, come on, it's just one night.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm a really good
person. We hear that a lot.
We hear that a lot. But just see, do you hear someone, the one who kills someone with a gun? Do you hear him?
I'm going to kill for only one day.
No. Do you hear him saying that I just clicked the trigger just for 3 seconds? Oh, come on. It was just 3 seconds.
So you actually should look outside the box. Do not be so small of a creature to think of it as just one day. And then this one day is going to give you the justification for all the wrong things that you do. That is going actually to affect your life, your future life. Because imagine a marriage, which is a contract between two person, starting with too much of vicious, wrong behaviors, then what is going to be the result and outcome of this marriage?
Everything has consequences.
Everything has consequences. Exactly.
So it can be good, it could be bad. So it all depends on you, how you keep it. I'm saying the couple that deserved the most best marriage was this couple. And then when they put it simple, how can I say that, oh, I deserve one of the best marriages. I want a big function. I want everyone to be here. All right. If you have enough of money, you can make others get married. There's so many people dying to get married, but they don't have enough money. And you would again see the consequences. Well, we're talking about consequences. If you want to see the better consequences, if you have enough of money to do much big kind of function, big show, keep yours simple, and with the rest of the money, go and make some poor girl get married.
And this is what we have it in our religion.
Exactly.
If the rich people try to share with the poor people, then the society is not going to suffer from this large gap between the poor and the rich.
And Quran also says when we give you the blessing, Surah Fajr, verse 15, that when we give you a blessing, you kind of have this misunderstanding that, oh, Allah has done a favor on me and He loves me. It's ibtila. It's a test.
Yeah, it's a test.
Then he says in verse 16, then there are people whom I have tested by taking from them. I'm testing some by giving them and I'm testing some by taking from them.
Yeah.
Because some of you, when I take from them, you say, oh, I'm the worst person on the earth. But both of you are in ibtila, in a state of test. So when you are in a state of test, maybe having enough money, your test is how you will get a poor person married. This is a test, and you can pass in this test in this beautiful way.
Yeah, that's very true. So let this be the gist of today's episode. We talked about the criteria of the person we're going to marry, and then we talked about the mehriye, and then we talked about the wedding function. Yes, and how it doesn't have to be so extravagant, and you don't have to spend so much of money on a night that is only a night, and it's not going to be the end of the world. Just take it easy. And thank you for listening to us. Until another session, may Allah protect you with His never-sleeping eyes. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting for something to happen to me. But this waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, brothers and sisters, dear listeners, welcome to Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. I am your host, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi. So we said that Ahlul Bayt, alayhim salamullah, they said that we need to make sure that we are clean on Friday. Imam al-Sadiq, he says, فَإِنَّ اللَّهَ يَطَّلِعُ عَلَىٰ أَهْلِ الْأَرْضِ لِيُضَاعَفَ الْحَسَنَاتِ. For Allah looks onto the people of earth to multiply their deeds. So on Friday, when I shower, put perfume, wear beautiful clothes, and Allah sees me in that state, just looking nice and looking clean, Allah will multiply my deeds. So if I, on a normal day, I pray two rak'ah, Allah gives me 10 hasanat. On Friday, He will give me 20. One last thing I want to mention when it comes to general health and public places, and that is a mucus. Okay, it's also another disgusting aspect of a human being that sometimes we indulge ourselves in. Now, it's fine when a person wants to do things on his own when there's no people around. I mean, I have no issue personally. I mean, do whatever you like. But the minute you step outside the house, or the minute there are other people with you, you have to be very careful. Now, especially when it comes to mucus, it's an accumulation of dirt that, you know, gets stuck in the nose. Or it is something that's stuck sometimes in the throat. If you want to take it out, you have to make sure it's done in a proper manner, proper way, away from people. For those who spit, especially in the masjid, then that's a form of disrespect to the masjid itself and to the people with him. And if we look at the narrations in regards to the ways of the Ahl Bayt themselves and how they used to conduct themselves around people. For example, a narrator says, I've never seen Imam Ridha alayhi salam spits in public, like generally, like he would not spit in front of people, not on a street, not on a walk path, or any place where people might be present. He would always do it when he is not seen by people. And this is not just Imam Ridha alayhi salam, it's all the imams. This is how the Ahl Bayt alayhim salam, they used to conduct themselves. Now, we as Muslims, and specifically as Shia, need to follow the ways of the Ahl Bayt. And sadly, I see a lot of people as they walk on the street, they spit, they throw their disgusting extras on the streets. Now, even the names itself is disgusting to mention. I'm going to reserve that to myself and not mention them. But I've seen many people as they walk, they spit in the streets and in front of other people, as other people are walking. That's not a sign of at least civilization, to say the least, rather than a sign of a believer. A mu'min needs to make sure that he's constantly looking good, smelling good, doing good things, not bad things. Recently, I was walking to the shrine of Imam Ridha alayhi salam, and an old lady, she spat in front of everyone on the side. And I, not only it was disrespectful to the imam, but it was also bad to the people who would have seen such an act, such a sight. So again, we need to follow the tradition and the ways of our imams, alayhim assalam, and maintain the general cleanness and health of public places.
آیت الله جوادی آملی, the author of the book مفاتیح الحیات, the keys of life.
این مفاتیح باید دو جلد باشه. چندین سال این حرف گفته میشه.
This book, مفاتیح, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است. چه فرون نماز و ثواب داره فرون روزون است.
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اون اینه که فرون درخت کاری اینجا کم ثواب داره دعا هم داره ثواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Another aspect of health, or general health, I should say, is that we need to make sure that animals are also kept away from the things that we consume ourselves or people consume in general. Because animals, as medical science tells us, that they carry themselves, they carry diseases and sicknesses. I mean, they tell us today that coronavirus was picked up by a bat. I'm not sure how accurate that is, but this is what we've been told. The plague was carried by mice, and so on and so forth. So animals do carry diseases. We have to make sure that things that people consume are hidden away from animals, or animals at least kept away. A person came to Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, and he says, I asked him about a mouse or a dog that drinks from oil or yogurt or something that people used to eat. أَيَحَلُّ أَكْلَ Can a man eat it? If, you know, an animal has tried to eat that before. The Imam says, إِن كَانَ جَرَّةٌ وَنَحُوهَا فَلَا يَأْكُلُهُ If it was in a container, kept in a container or something, then you should not eat it. Sometimes the animal itself is najis, therefore it becomes najis itself. So it becomes haram to consume. And sometimes if the animal is not najis, obviously there's a health issue in this regard that a person needs to avoid. And then he says, وَلَكِنْ يَنْتَفُعُ بِهِ فِي سِرَاجٍ أَوْ غَيْرَ Rather, he can use this oil either to light, to use it as light, because back in the day they would use it for lights and stuff like that, or they use it for other uses, but do not consume it, because consuming it, it either falls into the haram aspect, or at least into the disease aspect. So in either way, that me, in my own house, I have to make sure that these things that I consume and eat, at least kept away from animals. If it is for the public, because sometimes we have tanks that are for water, for drinking water for the public. Sometimes we have food place for the public and what have you. We have to make sure that these are also protected. We have to make sure that they are safe for people to consume, for people to eat. Again, that's also a general instruction from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam when it comes to keeping things clean. And like we said, being clean on a personal level or on a public level is one of the keys of life. One of the keys of life, meaning that me and you, my life depends on it. That if I don't take care of myself or take care of other people, that I could put myself at risk or other people at risk. We'll leave it here and we'll continue in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams, hear the children scream.
That was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Martyrdom of Imam Hadi, peace upon him. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Salam, dear friends, and heartfelt condolences to you on a very doleful day. Today is the third of the month of Rajab, on which the Prophet of Islam's 10th infallible heir was poisoned to martyrdom in the Iraqi city of Samarra by the usurper Abbasid regime. He was Imam Ali al-Naqi al-Hadi, peace upon him, who was the source of blessing for the seekers of truth. Please stay with us for a special feature in this regard. Whoever expects to meet Allah, Allah's time will indeed come, and He is the all-hearing, the all-knowing. What you heard was Ayah 5 of Surah Ankabut of the Noble Quran, in which the word meet or meeting gives the feeling of close proximity to God, who, however, is far glorious to have any shape, form, and place, all three of which signify limits and restrictions, and thus against the nature of the source of all creation. In view of these facts, whoever strives on the path of virtue, prays, fasts, abstains from undesirable things, acts, and sights, definitely feels proximity with the Lord Most High. But the first and foremost condition for this proximity or meeting is faith. In other words, it is faith based on firm conviction and in accordance with the description of the omnipresent Lord by His last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Here is an interesting hadith from the Prophet on meeting with the Lord, of course not physical, and the conditions stipulated for any such proximity. It reads, "He who desires to meet Allah on the day of resurrection, safe, purified, and without fearing the great horror, let him know, follow you, O Ali, and follow your two sons, Hassan and Hussein, and after them your infallible descendants, Ali ibn al-Hussein, Muhammad ibn Ali, Ja'far ibn Muhammad, Musa ibn Ja'far, Ali ibn Musa, Muhammad ibn Ali, Ali ibn Muhammad, Hassan ibn Ali, and Al-Mahdi, the last of them." The hadith is lengthy and elaborates on the benefits of love, affection, and obedience for the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali, peace upon him, whom the Prophet, on the express orders of God Almighty, had proclaimed as his vicegerent on the 18th of Dhul-Hajjah at Qadir Khum, while returning from his farewell Hajj pilgrimage. The important point is that the Prophet clearly specified by name the successors of his divinely designated heir, because he knew that a group of his disobedient companions would usurp the political right of leadership of Imam Ali, peace upon him, by depriving the Ahlul Bayt of the caliphate, which would be empties of its spirituality, by the unprincipled, the immoral, the unjust, and the ungodly. No wonder the narrator of this wonderful hadith from the Prophet that emphasizes the chain of authority in Islam is a member of this elite group itself. He is Imam Ali al-Hadi, peace upon him, the Prophet's 10th infallible successor, whose martyrdom anniversary we commemorate tomorrow on Friday, the 3rd of the sacred month of Rajab. This representative of the blessed event of Qadir Khum was a victim of a person who traced his questionable political rule to the scandalous gathering Saqifah Bani Sa'idah in Medina no sooner the Prophet had left the mortal world. Since Imam Hadi, peace upon him, was the Prophet's legitimate heir and one of the 12 persons whose obedience ensures proximity and meeting with Almighty Allah, the Caliph placed him under house arrest so that Muslims would be deprived of the chance to meet him and subsequently be deprived of proximity to God. Nonetheless, despite the restrictions placed upon him, the 10th Imam continued his enlightening task, and at every opportunity he expounded the Ummah the genuine teachings of his illustrious ancestor, the Prophet, such as the above-mentioned hadith. Thus, to make sure that people will always have access to the chosen of God, long after the disgraceful institution called the Caliphate vanishes from the scene, Imam Hadi, peace upon him, bequeathed gems of guidance for the faithful concerning his grandson, the promised savior of humanity, Imam Mahdi. May God hasten his reappearance. A famous statement from Imam Hadi, peace upon him, gives an important piece of advice to the Muslims to save them from deviation. It reads, during the ghaybat of your qa'im, the 12th Imam, a group of the ulama will call people to believe in his imamat and defend his creed by citing proofs revealed by Allah in order to save the weak-minded from either the deceptions of the Satan and his hordes or the deceptions of Imam Ali's enemy. In the absence of such ulama, everyone would have strayed away from the religion decreed by Allah. Thus, as the pilot holds the rudder of the ship, these ulema will hold firmly unto the hearts of the Shi'ites. For example, a steadfast adherence of the Prophet's household, preventing them from straying. Such ulema are the most excellent in the sight of Allah the Exalted. Imam Hadi, peace upon him, whose imamat could be divided into two parts, 17 years in Medina and 17 years in Samarra, where he was under house arrest by the Abbasid regime, groomed Muslims for the ghaybat, or period of occultation, of his yet-to-be-born grandson, the 12th Imam, who will rise in the end times as Mahdi al-Qa'im, peace upon him. Imam Mahdi will cleanse the earth of corruption and oppression by establishing the global government of peace, prosperity, and justice. In view of the guidance of posterity, the 10th Imam groomed a great many ulema, who through a solid chain of succession have kept alive the aspirations of the faithful till this day, over a millennium and almost two centuries later. At the same time, in that politically volatile period, when uprisings frequently rocked Abbasid rule from Khorasan in the east to North Africa in the west, mostly by descendants of the Prophet, he strengthened the foolproof system of wakalat, or representation, to enable the faithful in the furthest parts of the realm to keep in constant contact without detection by the regime. All this he did for the sake of facilitating the path of the faithful for meeting or proximity with Allah. Perhaps one of the most wonderful intellectual and scientific traditions transmitted from Imam, the 10th Imam, is the letter that he sent to the people of Ahwaz in Iran, in which he refuted the concept of compulsion that the Ashariyat school adopted and spread, claiming that human beings are compelled into actions and have no will or option. In contrast to compulsion, the Imam also refuted the concept of free will that the Mu'tazilites believed in. After refuting these two concepts, Imam Hadi, peace upon him, proved with irrefutable scientific proofs the concept of the matter between the two matters of compulsion and free will, as taught by the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt. Are some excerpts of the epistle of Imam Hadi, peace upon him, to the people of Ahwaz. Your letter came to me, and I understood what you mentioned of your disagreement in your religion. Your plunging in the matter of faith, the belief of some of you in compulsion, and others in free will, and the disagreement, separation, and enmity among you because of that. The Ummah agrees unanimously with no disagreements that the Quran is the truth that has no doubts in it for Muslims of all sects. The Quran is the truth that there is no difference between Muslims in its revelation and truthfulness. So, when the Quran testifies the truthfulness of some news, but a group of the Ummah denies it, they have actually deemed themselves as outcasts from the Muslim Ummah. In other words, the Imam meant to say that Muslims must refer to the Quran, to which falsehood shall not come from any direction. The Quran is the truth, and that which contradicts it is falsehood. Whoever believes this falsehood will be out of Islam, he added. The first news that is proved, witnessed, and confirmed by the book is the saying of the Messenger of Allah, I leave you the Thaqalain, that is the book of Allah and my household. You shall not go astray as long as you hold fast to them. They shall not separate even when they shall come to me at the pond in paradise. We found the evidences of this hadith in the Book of Allah, where Allah said, Only Allah is your guardian and his messenger, and those who believe, those who keep up prayer and pay the poor rate while they bow. And whoever takes Allah and his messenger and those who believe for a guardian, then surely the party of Allah, Hezbollah, shall be triumphant. All Muslim sects have narrated that this ayah, which is 55 of Surah Ma'idah, was revealed when Imam Ali, peace upon him, had given his ring as charity while he was bowing in prayer, and Allah praised him for that and revealed this verse. We found the hadith of the Messenger of Allah saying, Whoever I was his guardian, Ali is to be his guardian. And you are to me as was Aaron to Moses, but there will be no prophet after me. And Ali repays my debts, carries out my promises, and he is my caliph over you after me. The tradition clearly indicated the caliphate of Imam Ali, peace upon him, after the mission of prophets, and that there was no one worthier of the prophets than Imam Ali, peace upon him. the pioneer of intellectual and civilizational development in the earth. Thus, on the basis of these undeniable facts, Imam Hadi, peace upon him, refuted the ideas of both the groups, whether those claiming compulsion and those claiming free will. Thus, through debates and rational explanation of the Noble Quran and the genuine hadith of the Prophet, the 10th Imam enlightened many of the Muslims and saved them from disbelief. We once again offer our condolences to you, the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hadi, peace upon him.
From our imams, the 9th imam is the first, whose imamat began at a very young age, about 8 or 9.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Jafar, Muhammad ibn Ali, al-Barakat.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Jafar, Muhammad, the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the 9th divinely appointed imam among the household of the Holy Prophet, the Messenger of Allah. He was also the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, with his talents, his genius, and his great endless scientific ability, has proven the luminous reality adopted by the Shia that an imam must be the most aware and virtuous one of the people of his time. And it has also proven that the one who has more knowledge than anyone else must be the imam, regardless of whether he is young or old. Allah the Almighty has provided the infallible imams of the Ahlul Bayt, peace and blessings upon them all, with knowledge, wisdom, and sound judgment, similar to how Allah provided the prophets of the past with these same concepts and qualities. Truly, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam has shown this reality to all of the world.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's great to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues and the divine conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam, the 9th divinely appointed imam. So, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, of course, divinely appointed, meaning that Allah selected His Eminence to be this leader of humanity, this focal point and this access of the cosmos, which is known as an imam.
of course, beautiful verses of the Holy Quran as well, which talk about an imam and how it is Allah who ja'ala, he appoints a imam. Now, the divinely appointed imam, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, of course, speaks about many things, and a lot of these things are based upon the conversations and the overall mentality and thought process that the society has in general. Now, when we look at the conversations that are going on in this era, of course, the conversations themselves tell us a lot about the era in which these conversations are taking place. So, for example, we